Welcome to the 341st episode of the 4th and 24 podcast with Patrick Winograd. I am your host, Patrick Winograd. In this edition, our topics are a review of my weekend predictions, our weekly look at the NBA, and a recap of the past week in college basketball. So let's jump right in with a look back at my weekend predictions. Not a great week for me, I'll say it off the bat. In the NCAA, I went 0-4, and in the NBA, I went 2-2. So a 2-6 record this week. Brings me to a 1492 and 943 overall record, a 61.3% winning percentage. Again, in terms of my thoughts on this, obviously wasn't a very good week for me. Going to the individual games, Duke beat Michigan, which I had wrong. BYU shorthanded beat Iowa State 79 to 69. Arizona shorthanded beat Houston on the road 73 to 66. And then Tennessee went into Vandy and beat them in Nashville 69 to 65. So just wrong picks. I mean, these are all really close games, could have gone either way, and I just ended up on the wrong side of them for, well, all of them. As we can tell, really not much to say, I guess, in terms of analyzing, reasons why I got anything wrong. I mean, it just didn't go the way that I went in four straight close games. There are definitely a few games that come down to the final possession pretty much every week. And I guess I can say that for the most part, I'm fortunate enough to get one or two to go my way, and maybe even more. And some of them are, even upset underdog picks that I decide to pick that then get that upset or get the win, whatever it may be. But this week was not the case. Any upset I took, any prediction I made was not right. Although it's interesting because I obviously picked two games in there where there were injuries affecting them, and the shorthanded team won both games. And I think maybe I probably would have picked BYU to beat Iowa State full strength, but given it was their first game or one of their first games without Richie Saunders, I didn't think that was going to work out for them. And honestly, I thought Houston was going to rebound from their loss earlier in the week and beat Arizona, regardless of the fact that there was no co-compete for Arizona. But I was wrong on that one. So the other two were just close games that I got wrong. But that was really interesting to me that those teams were able to win shorthanded for sure. And then in the NBA, straight out of the All-Star break, it's really interesting to pick those games because you really never know what teams are going to come out of the break doing. A lot of teams will start to flame out at this point in the season, or some of them get even better. Just kind of depends. But the Pistons beat the Knicks 126 to 111. Got that one wrong. The Spurs beat the Suns 121 to 94, which I got right. The Celtics beat the Warriors 121 to 110, which I got right. And then the Clippers beat the Nuggets 115 to 114, which I got wrong. But overall, again, hard to pick straight out of the All-Star break. We all know that also, college basketball, definitely something that I'm paying way more attention to, especially in the end of February, beginning of March point in the calendar. So feel fine about the predictions. Can't win them all in college basketball. Feel pretty confident about my process in picking games, as I always have, though, because, well, the all-time record is still pretty good, and I'm very confident in that fact. But for now, wasn't a great week. But we will move on now to talk about the NBA. In the NBA, it is the Pistons who lead the in Eastern Conference. They are 42 and 14, still just behind the Thunder. For the best record in the league, they're 8-2 in their last 10. Came out of the break playing pretty well, completely destroyed the Knicks, as I talked about. They are 5 games ahead of the Boston Celtics, who are 37 and 19. They are in second place currently, also 8-2 in their last 10. Obviously, there's been, Jason Tatum rehab smoke, so to speak, over the last few weeks, which is interesting. We'll see what happens with that. Who knows? But they're looking pretty good regardless. Then you have the Knicks, who are just one game behind the Celtics. They are in the 3 seed spot. They have the same amount of wins as the Knicks, but are the Celtics, excuse me, but they're 2 games behind in the loss column at 37 and 21. They've won 2 in a row, and they are 7-3 in their last 10. And then the Cavs are rounding out the top 4 in the East. All these teams, of course, would get home field if the season, or home court, excuse me, in the first round if the season ended today. And they are all playing like teams that deserve it. They're also 8-2 in their last 10. The Cavs are. They're 36 and 22 overall, a game behind the Knicks, which puts them a game and a half ahead of the Toronto Raptors, who are still in position for the 5 seed. They're 6-4 in their last 10. They've won 2 in a row. They're 34 and 23, and they are 3 games ahead of the Philadelphia 76ers, who are in the 6th seed currently. 5-5 in their last 10 for the Sixers, which puts them barely ahead of the Magic and the Heat, who are both just a half game behind Philly. The Magic with a 30-26 record, meanwhile the Heat with a 31-27 record. So really interesting stuff there in terms of who might get that final spot that doesn't have to play in the play-in bracket. But the Heat have won three in a row, best point differential out of all those teams by a pretty good margin. So interesting to monitor there. But the rest of the East, though, you have the Hawks, who are 28-31. They're 3.5 games behind the Heat for the eighth seed. Then you have the Hornets, who of course made that surge before the All-Star break, still 7-3 in their last 10 based off of that good streak of play that they had. They're just a half of a game behind the Hawks at 27-31. Then you have the Bucks, who have played three fewer games than the Hornets, so they're tied in the loss column, but they're 24-31, so they are 1.5 back from a standings perspective. And then the Bulls, who have now lost 9 games in a row, and are 3 games behind the Hornets. So really looking like we know the 10 that are going to make the playoffs in the East. I guess there's a chance that the Bucks could get into that bracket ahead of the Hornets or the Hawks, probably not the Heat or the Magic, or the Sixers, but kind of an interesting picture there in the East, obviously, with the Hornets kind of surging and really just taking a spot that was mostly up for grabs just because no one else has played well enough to take it for themselves. But obviously, they've been a dangerous team recently. We'll see if they can keep that up after the All-Star break. Honestly, it came at probably the worst time for the Hornets because, they had a lot of momentum and that was all kind of killed by the break. But we'll see if they if the time off really affects them that much. See that in the coming weeks, though. But in the rest of the East, at the very, very bottom, you have the Wizards at 16-40, the Nets at 15-41, and finally the Pacers at 15-43. Way too far out of the picture to even be discussing how many games back they are in the standings. But on the other side of things, in the West Coast, or in the Western Conference, of course, not on the West Coast, but they are in the West, of course, the Oklahoma City Thunder are 44-14, best record in the league. They are 6-4 in their last 10, but not too far behind them. Not only the Pistons for the best record chase, but also the Spurs. They're just 2.5 games back. And it's now, instead of being the Thunder and the rest in the West, it's the Thunder and the Spurs and then the rest of the West. I mean, that the big gap comes after the Spurs now. They have won 9 games in a row, 41-16 overall, to move just within 2.5 games of the Thunder. Meanwhile, they have built a 5.5 game cushion over the three seed, who is currently Houston. The Rockets are 35-21. They're also tied with the Nuggets, who are 36-22. So both of those two, 8 games back of the one seed, 5.5 back of the Spurs, but also just 3 games ahead of the Suns, who are in the seventh seed. And I'll get back to that in a second. But in between those teams, you have the Lakers and the Timberwolves. The Lakers at 34-22, and the Timberwolves at 35-23. Both of those two are 6-4 in their last 10. They are 1 game behind the Rockets and the Nuggets, who are, of course, in that third and fourth place tie. And both of those teams are 2 games ahead of the Suns, who are 11 games back overall. Two back of the Lakers and the Timberwolves, as I just said, three of the Rockets and the Nuggets, and 2.5 ahead of the Warriors, who are currently in the eighth seed. Again, kind of the West following a similar template to the East in terms of, there's a battle for that six that last spot in the real play-in in the real playoffs, but then in the play-in bracket, there's a little bit of separation from teams in different tiers in there. And the Warriors, of course, 2.5 back of the Suns, but three ahead of the Blazers, who are in that ninth spot currently. And then you have the Clippers, who are also in the mix. They are a half game behind the Blazers, which means they're three behind the Warriors, at 27-30, the flipped record of the Warriors. But that rounds out the playoff and play-in picture. At the bottom of the West, you have the Grizzlies, who are 21-35. They're 3-7 in their last 10, obviously, based on their trades and general things going on. Definitely one of the teams that are tanking. Then you have the Mavericks. They are 20-36. I should mention the Mavericks 1 game behind the Grizzlies. The Grizzlies are 5.5 back of that final play-in spot that the Clippers are currently holding, so not very likely that they're going to make it there. But then the real bottom of the West, similar to the bottom three in the East, you have definitely the worst teams. The Jazz, who are 18-40, the Pelicans, who are 16-42, and the Sacramento Kings, who are 13-46. Although it is worth noting, the Kings did finally win a game last night against Memphis. So the Kings finally ending that losing streak. I think it was at 16 games at that point. But of course, Tune in next week for more NBA talk, although I know this one was a little bit abbreviated. That's because it's almost March, and speaking of that, finally, let's talk about the last week of college basketball action. Going back to last Tuesday, of course, Tuesday, one of the more fun days in the college basketball calendar every week, but Michigan beat Purdue 91-80. Of course, Michigan moving up to number one in the AP poll heading into the week. Of course, did not exit the week number one, and we will get to why that is way later in here, but there are a lot of games to get through. So, other than saying that Michigan really took this game over with a 15-0 run and then just never really looked back, never really was close beyond that, well, I will move on to the rest of the games. Iowa beat number 9 Nebraska 57-52. So, more interesting Big Ten action. Obviously, this one a bigger, definitely an upset. Michigan going on the road, even though they were on the road in Mackey, they were the favorites. Meanwhile, this Iowa team, playing at home, storming the court against Nebraska. Who would have thought that Nebraska would be a court storm opponent, not the team doing the court storming? But here we are in 2026. Then you have number 12 Florida. They beat South Carolina 76 to 62. Arizona State beat number 13 Texas Tech 72 to 67. This game took on extra importance later, though, because it was revealed that JT Toppin tore his ACL in this game, which is just, I mean, of course, it's obviously unfortunate for a guy who was contending for player of the year, and definitely on pace to be a first team All-American, or at least in that conversation, if not a second team All-American, and definitely all conference player in the Big 12. But unfortunately, his season is over, and a lot of people, have equated that with Texas Tech's season being over, frankly. But we'll get to what happened with them later in the week when they played their first game without him. Again, get to that later. But for now, devastating loss both on the court and off the court with Toppin's injury. Speaking of injuries, NC State beat number 16 North Carolina 82 to 58, a commanding victory against the Caleb Wilson and Henry Vassar-less Tar Heel squad. So, it's a good win for NC State. However, that's not a great signature win considering North Carolina was down two of their best players, to the point that this game was, I think NC State was favored by like 7 points or something like that. So, a very, very wide spread for what should have been a much closer game, but injuries will affect that and do that to you. Then, probably a more surprising result. Rhode Island beat number 18 St. Louis 81 to 76. Rhode Island has not had a great season at all, but getting a huge upset here against the Billikens, who of course were previously undefeated in conference and only had one loss on a buzzer beater earlier in the season. But a lot of people would argue, hey, it's good to get the loss out of the way now. They were going to lose probably at some point. It means th this team's not going to struggle to be in at large in the first place. But if something happens in the A10 tournament, that look, this team will only end up with three, four losses. Definitely getting in as an at large, but it's also good to have that loss as a mental reset, gives you things to work on moving forward. And we saw how that impacted them later in the week, and I'll get to that, of course. But SMU beat number 21 Louisville 95 to 85. Louisville still struggling to go on the road and get big victories. SMU, meanwhile, getting a much needed, I wouldn't call this a signature victory, but definitely a notable win that the committee could say that's a quality win, that's a quad one win, that this team proved they could beat tournament level competition pretty comfortably at home too. So a good win for the Mustangs. Then number 22 Miami of Ohio stayed undefeated by beating UMass 86 to 77. A good win for the Redhawks there. Number 15 Michigan State beat UCLA 82 to 59. Obviously the bigger story of this game came in the post game interviews, and I don't know. I don't want to get into it because I guess I don't want Mick Cronin to somehow hear this podcast and ask me if I was raising his voice or raising my voice at his team's performance against Michigan State. But UCLA did not play well at all in that game, although they turned it around later in the week. Again, more spoilers for later, I guess teasers for later. But Ohio State beat number 24 Wisconsin 86 to 69. The Buckeyes continuing to be so great against teams that aren't in quad one, that are maybe tournament level or at least bubble level, but just dismal against other teams. And it's been a trend all season long for them. But Wisconsin also continuing their trend of being great against teams that are far above the bubble and probably the best teams in the Big Ten, but honestly not great when they're playing teams that are just kind of middle of the pack teams that are, fighting for a tournament spot. It's really interesting dichotomy, a really interesting way that team's season has unfolded, but Wisconsin definitely a dangerous team in general. Then you had Villanova, who, somewhat surprisingly went to overtime with Xavier, but they did pull out the win, 92-89, excuse me, in overtime. Definitely another team kind of in that same spot as Wisconsin. UCF beat TCU 82-75 and 82-71, excuse me, in an important bubble battle. Of course, at this point in the year, we're talking about bubble teams whenever they play each other 100%. Miami beat Virginia Tech 67-66. Miami definitely, a safely in the field team for now, whereas Virginia Tech definitely on the bubble, but a big win for Miami. Had Virginia Tech won this game, I think they probably would have ended up in my tournament field. There's really not much separation between the first five teams out, in my opinion. A lot of people seem to think might really only be the first four out, but depends on who you ask, and also who was in that group. Depends on who you ask. But Virginia Tech with that win, probably since it was on the road, would have gotten into the field, honestly, in my opinion, or at least been right up close to it, closer than they are now, even though I still have been pretty close. But then you have Georgia. They beat Kentucky 86-78. A big win for Georgia. They also are kind of in that 9-10 seed range like Miami, where they need some wins they just need to really st not stabilize because they're playing fine, but just hold everything steady at the end of the year. Make sure you win the games you're supposed to. It's fine to lose the games you're supposed to. They don't need big upsets to get in the tournament, but they can't be the ones on the unfortunate end of a big upset. And speaking of the unfortunate end of big upsets, Creighton beat number five UConn 91-84, giving bracketologists an extra headache on top of whatever is going on in the Big 12. Obviously, the committee reveal was this weekend, and UConn ended up with a two seed as the number five overall team. And then, of course, as we'll get to later, Iowa State lost, so they're probably back to a one seed. But honestly, who knows at this point? I think this loss honestly could have been factored in a lot more based on the way UConn's been playing for a while. This was more of a, you could see this coming from a mile away that they were going to drop a game at some point because they've just been playing with their food too much, honestly. But still, loss somewhat shocking. We'll talk about what happened to Creighton later in the week. But then there was one of the games of the year, potentially. Number 25 Alabama beat number 20 Arkansas 117-115 in double overtime. If you like offensive basketball and if you like NBA draft talk, this was the game for you. LeBron Fylon had, I think, 35 points in this game. On the other side of things, Darius Acuff had 49 in the loss for Arkansas. So, 49 despite the loss is ridiculous. But yeah, this was a great, entertaining game between two teams that like to play with a little bit of pace and have some fun with their guard play and get out and run a ton. But the rest of the country, you had Wake Forest beat Clemson 85-77. Clemson just keeps on losing for really no apparent reason. They're just struggling right now. They're going through kind of the dog days of the season, and they need to turn it back around before the tournament. I don't think they're in any danger of missing the tournament, but yeah, it's hard to believe that if this team lost, eight or nine games in a row heading in, that they'd actually still get in, despite how high up they might have been before all of that. It's just really hard to flame out that hard at the end of the season and still expect to make the tournament. But I think they're going to stabilize, win a few games here down the stretch, even though they haven't really shown the prowess to do that anytime recently. But then you have number four Arizona. They beat number 23 BYU 75-68. Another good win for the Wildcats. Then number eight, Kansas beat Oklahoma State 81-69. Oklahoma State, kind of one of those teams that's trending on the very, very low end of the bubble. I guess if they, if they stack up a few wins, they're fine, but I don't think they're going to do that. Then you have number 17, St. John's. They beat Marquette 76-70, a pretty close game. Unexpectedly close for sure for the Johnnies, but they did pull out the victory. Mizzou beat Vanderbilt 81-80. That's a huge win for Missouri because this is a team that has the right metrics and has good enough wins that they should be higher than they probably are, but the underlying metrics just they don't really catch up to the win losses for them, or to the wins and losses for them, and also just overall everything's kind of in the 40s for them. So they're still a bubble team by default, but they really shouldn't be. And I think a lot of that is their own fault for losing games they shouldn't lose and, barely losing at home to some better competition. But finally, they did pull out the win in this one, despite really trying their best to throw it away. And if you were watching that game, you know what I'm talking about. But moving on from that, St. Mary's beat Seattle U 72-70. Number 10, Illinois destroyed USC 101-65. Really bad for a bubble team to lose by 36 at home to anybody, but especially in that game. And also USC lost later in the week to Oregon. So pretty much just running themselves straight out of the tournament. Then you have Utah State. They beat Boise State 75-56. Aggies keep on rolling. St. Louis bounced back from that loss that I talked about earlier to Rhode Island by beating VCU 88-75 in the game between the probably pretty easily the two best teams in the A10. Both of them tournament quality. We'll see if VCU has the I don't know, the appeal to the committee that to actually let them in, but it's looking like an uphill battle. Had they won this game, that probably would have vaulted them into the higher end of the last four in teams, maybe into the buys territory, but for now, still on the outside looking in for sure after that loss. Then you have number 7 Purdue. They beat Indiana 93-64, just destroying the Hoosiers in a rematch of a rivalry game that Indiana won earlier in the year. Number 22 Miami of Ohio beat Bowling Green 91-77. Again, just staying alive, staying undefeated. I think, you know, I've probably talked about this a little bit throughout the year of can this team actually get net large. At this point, they're probably 3 or 4 wins away from securing it. I don't see how they don't get in if their only loss is in the conference tournament. I mean, really, it would be really hard to deny a team that goes 31-1 or 32-1 or 33-1 or, you know, you can run off the names or the potential records for forever. But no matter when they lose, if it's only in the conference tournament, I really don't think you could keep this team out. It's just not possible, especially because the bubble in general is pretty weak. I know they haven't played many quad one or quad two games, which is obviously the big thing going against them, but they've been so dominant. They've won so many games. It's really hard to say that, look, you'd rather have that team in there, or you'd rather not have that team in there, and instead you'd take a team like an Ohio State who hasn't won any of the quad one games that it's played. You know, are we rewarding a team for losing 8 close-ish? I mean, honestly, some of them haven't been close, but 8 games that are some close, some not close, so significantly better teams, or would we rather just reward the team that, you know, everyone was afraid to schedule, but they ran through the teams that were on their schedule? I mean, it's a really interesting debate, but I think they deserve to be in. Can't tell you that I'm for sure putting them in. I my job is to do what I think the committee will do, not what I think the committee should do. I would be advocating for them if I was on the selection committee, but I'm not. So that's a wrap on the Miami talk, though. What I will say is that Duke has taken over the number one overall seed by virtue of their win against Michigan on Saturday. Even though Michigan unequivocally has the better resume, they're number one in everything except for BPI, Duke still gets the head-to-head advantage, and because same record, and Duke is pretty much number two across the board, and if not, you know, number three, only behind Arizona and a few things. That signature win that Duke just got definitely vaults them over Michigan for now. And I think as long as they end up with the same amount of losses down the stretch, it's probably still going to be Duke, although you can make the argument that depending on Michigan's Big Ten tournament path and whatever happens to Duke's path, if Michigan picks up, you know, 5 or 6 quad one wins in the rest of the season, with the schedule they have, you could, I guess, say that maybe they deserve to go back over Duke for the number one overall seed. But I doubt the committee will do that, especially because there really isn't a difference between the number one overall and the number two overall seed, especially when the two teams are not going to go to the same region. Duke is going to want to play in the East. Michigan's going to want to play in the Midwest, regardless of if they're the one or the two overall. So, not really relevant conversation, frankly, but both teams probably going to still get one seeds. I think that's pretty much assured. But then you've St. John's. They beat Creighton 81-52 after that upset Creighton pulled off. The Johnnies taking them seriously, and just destroying them. Florida State beat Clemson 70-65. Again, Clemson just continuing to just spiral out of control. Cincinnati beat number 8 Kansas 84-68, and probably what I would say is the upset of the week. Number 16 North Carolina beat Syracuse 77-64. Worth noting because there was no Caleb Wilson in this game, they still pulled out that game on the road by a pretty big margin. Number 14 Virginia beat Miami 86-83. Again, Miami still playing good basketball, still definitely within the tournament, but Virginia is just kind of a buzzsaw this year. They're not going to lose many games outside of when they're playing the other top teams in the conference, and that has held true so far, and I expect it to stay true for the rest of the season. Tennessee beat Vanderbilt, as we talked about on predictions, a big win for the Volunteers. Number 13, Texas Tech beat Kansas State 100-72. That is what I was referencing earlier when I kept saying, look, they're without JT Toppin, but they can still play well. Well, here you go. There's your evidence. Big win for them by a huge margin. Very efficient on offense without Toppin even in the picture. So we'll see if that can continue though against top end teams, because that's where they really get especially reliant on Toppin and Christian Anderson. So we'll see what happens when, they're playing a top of the line team and that team's just now able to key in on stopping Anderson only because Toppin's not a threat anymore. Then you have Arizona, who beat Houston, as we talked about in predictions. In an important bubble game, Georgia beat Texas 91 to 80, definitely knocking Texas squarely back on the bubble, putting Georgia in safer territory after that 2-0 week that they just had. Number 20, Arkansas beat Missouri 94 to 86. Important win for Arkansas to get. Missouri would like to have that one, definitely would put them in safer territory, but still in the field for now. TCU beat West Virginia 60 to 54 in a game that I wouldn't call an elimination game, but TCU was the home game in this one. If West Virginia beat TCU at home, West Virginia is going to go ahead of TCU in bracketology. TCU beating West Virginia at home is kind of holding serve, and at the same time, they're still probably not in the field. I think Bracket Matrix has like three teams sharing pretty much 50 to 60-ish votes, depending on when you check between TCU and then like New Mexico and Ohio State, I think, are the other two. So it's an interesting debate, but I think TCU for now is way too close on the cut line to really be calling them safely in or even confidently out. I think I could flip on this on a dime. So a good win for them regardless, but definitely one that they needed to stay on the right side of that conversation for now. Then you have number 5 UConn, who beat Villanova 93 to 83. The important bounce back that was necessary after whatever happened in Lansing. UCLA beat number 10 Illinois 95 to 94 in overtime. That one definitely shocked people, I think, based on the way that UCLA has been trending. But also, they beat Purdue at home earlier in the season, so it can't be that surprising that they got this win. They've definitely, I mean, this is a team that entered the preseason in the top 15 or 20. They just haven't played well all year, and they've looked really bad against top competition like, Michigan, Michigan State. Not close in those games at all. But they still did get this victory. Then you have Auburn, who beat Kentucky 75 to 74. Auburn just needs to win games. I mean, they have the metrics to be in the tournament. They just have a terrible record that it's really just an eyesore when you look at it. I mean, they have, I think 7 now quad 1 and 2 wins, but they're 7 and 13 or something like that in or 7 and 14 maybe even in those games. So it's just tough to look at that and say that's a tournament team. But wins like this surely help to alleviate any of those concerns. Then you have Nevada, who beat Utah State. Nevada trying to put themselves back on the bubble. I think it's a little bit too late for that. BYU beat Iowa State, as we talked about in predictions. A big win for them to kind of stabilize their seeding, give the committee more evidence that they really haven't dropped off too far without Richie Saunders. And they should be seeded mostly on what they have actually done throughout the season, regardless of what they end up doing these last few games. This gives them a quality win without Saunders, proves that point. Number 15, Michigan State beat Ohio State 66 to 60. The Buckeyes had a lead at the half, and they choked away. Again, not able to come up with a win against top-of-the-line competition. Then you have number 24, Wisconsin, who beat Iowa 84 to 71. A big win for the Badgers to kind of keep hovering around that top 25, six seed mark-ish, maybe a 7, depending on who you ask. Then on Monday night action, big Monday, Kansas just doesn't lose. Number 14, Kansas beat number 5, Houston, 69 to 56. Three straight losses for Houston, though. I'm not worried about it long term, but it is interesting that they played top competition finally and three straight losses in those games. And even before that, they split with Texas Tech too. So, not a great sign in terms of how are they going to compete in the tournament. But the other thing is Houston does this every year, in terms of just going to the tournament, maybe being slept on by people for, or at least not slept on, but at the value that their seed is at, definitely undervalued pretty much every year. So we'll see if that happens again because of these late season losses. But finally, you have number 18, North Carolina, who beat number 24, Louisville, 77 to 74. Again, no Caleb Wilson in that game, but another big win for the Tar Heels. So that is all we have for this edition of the 4th and 24 podcast. Please be sure to check out our next podcast, which will be on Tuesday, March 3rd, where we will once again talk about Patrick's or my weekend predictions, excuse me, and have our weekly review of the NBA and college basketball action. In the meantime, check out my picks for next weekend's games, which will be posted as always on Thursday, and my College Hoops Bracketology, which comes out every Monday and now every Friday as well for the rest of the season. All of that on our social media handles at 4th and 24. That's the number 4, THAND, plus the number 24. Thank you for listening.